Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. A little Sunday strategy session, a theory I've been working on a little bit here in terms of just thinking about some bigger picture ideas and trying to implement Analytics of Dynasty principles in a more diverse way. And one of the things that I have found with the Analytics of Dynasty strategy is we can get a little bit illiquid. So what I mean by that is we sort of know that there is a value to waiting on quarterback, especially when we know the quarterback position generally. So what I mean by that is now this year we have a better understanding that Matt Ryan, for example, is on probably a two-year window. Like, we feel pretty confident about that. Feel pretty confident about Goff being on a two-year window. Feel confident about Cousins in a couple-year window. And then I think there's upside from those guys from there. But now we sort of have an idea that they're in a pretty good, comfortable situation. Stafford, same way. Tannehill, same way. So that range of the position is a range that we typically feel pretty good about in terms of hitting, in terms of getting some... the warp difference, for example, is not that much different from, you know, quarterback like 7-8 to quarterback 15 or so. The warp difference, even in Superflex, isn't that much different. And so when you're sort of thinking about those things, especially in the pre-draft process, right, the ADP process, it ends up being a little bit bigger gap once you sort of get into it. But in terms of predicting what is going to happen, generally speaking, the 3-7 range in startup drafts, which is, you know, around, like I said, around 8 or so through, like, you know, the 20s, that range, broadly speaking, is pretty flat. And then you sort of get past that range and there's a pretty big drop off. So historically, I would have been, all right, let's hammer it. Let's hammer the later quarterbacks. You know, let's hammer, you know, we sort of know this is an efficiency. This is a, you know, we can sort of take that on. We can really wait at the position and load up and, you know, and run a trio of Ryan, Stafford, Goff, Ryan, Stafford, Cousins. You know, take your pick of like those five or six guys and sort of run through them. And that's a good strategy. That's a effective historical strategy. The gap in it, in the hole in it, I think we need to think about in terms of what the, you know, the more I sort of study quarterback is applies broadly to the rest of the positions, but this is especially true at quarterback, is when you have those guys, it is really difficult to access upper tier quarterbacks. It's really tough to do a big upgrade. It's very expensive. It's not impossible, but it's very difficult. And so to trade, for example, right now, to put together a deal of one of those guys for Watson, you're going to have to add to it. And how much is that difference, right? You're going to have to add to one of those guys in a Dak Prescott deal when Dak was hurt last year. You're going to have to probably add a lot. And so that's a, you know, that becomes a situation of, all right, so you paid this lesser price, but to sort of, you know, in the startup draft, and that's fine, but to sort of get up and access the one of the elite guys, whether that's a falling, you know, depressed value type situation, whether it's injury, whether it's suspension risk, whatever it is, you trying to access that range becomes a lot harder. You're going to have to probably mortgage picks. You know, maybe Watson's not the best example of this, but the Dak Prescott deal, you know, to try and access one of these guys that's that is significantly up there in cost, it's much more difficult to come from the 20s. So one of the things I've been thinking about in terms of roster construction is the concept of what I'm going to call layering for now. At some point, I'll probably come up with I'll find a better name for it. But thinking about like layering our rosters. And so having guys at different price points. And so that gives you flexibility to either move up or down when you need to. So for example, right now I think Justin Herbert is overvalued. I just having him up there 106 in startup drafts, post drafts, it's just too high. But I know that in terms of, you know, the risk profile, some of the stuff I've talked about in other Sunday shows, all of those things, it's just, he's just too expensive, right? He hasn't proven enough to sort of warrant that level of risk. However, having him right now in a spot where I have him and I'm sort of itching because I sort of know it's a suboptimal bet, but I'm not super concerned about it in the present term because I know I can sort of make a pivot when I want to. All right, I can go up. I can try and make a pivot when I want to. I can go up or I can go down. You know, I can add to him to get Mahomes, conceivably. I can add to him to get maybe Dak Prescott, Josh Allen, if I want to. Or I could pivot down. You know, I can take Justin Herbert and get Russell Wilson plus. I can take Justin Herbert and get Matt Stafford plus plus. And I can take Justin Herbert and get Ryan Tannehill plus plus. I can do all of those things, and it gives me options. It gives me the ability to move around the board if I want to. It gives me the ability to move around and find value, and I can do it in a way that I'm in control because I can trade him down and take a perceived lesser quarterback, or I could trade him up and be much more able to access a higher-end quarterback than Justin Herbert. If he's my quarterback one on my roster, then if it's Stafford, or if it's Matt Ryan, or if it's Tannehill, or if it's, heck, for that matter, Rodgers. All of those things, it's very, you know, he gives you a level of flexibility that it's outside of just production. It's outside of just quote market value insulation, right? I don't really believe in that. It's largely production based, but it gives you access to additional markets, right? Kind of like in a free trade, right? There's no tariff. Right? There's a huge tariff when you got to try and trade Matt Ryan for, you know, Dak Prescott, right? There's a huge, huge tax to be paid. Whereas Justin Herbert, you know, it's a much more of like a free trade type deal. Like it's the NAFTA effect, right? Because you have much closer markets. You know, you don't have quite the difference in terms of treatment. And so that's the thing I really am thinking about more and more about when we do these deals about, you know, looking at profiles, and then we can pivot off of them. But to sort of be able to do that, we kind of have to be in the range. You kind of have to be in the ballpark. And so, you know, you can have a suboptimal team in March Madness that can beat the much better team, but you got to get in the tournament first. And that's kind of the idea of having, you know, being able to pull some of these trades. I think it's a 400 level thing. Right, we sort of know what the productive profiles is. There's a level to it beyond just, you know, people typically will just say, hey, it's insulation. You know, he's much safer. Not really, right? And the data that I've been studying, and I'm going to have, you know, more a bigger topic on this in 2022, and I'll preview it here, of course, but it's not really an insulation thing with Herbert. That's not the reason that I'm in on it, because he's actually more risky. When you look at that profile than some of the other guys in that range that have done it, you know, he's got a lot more variability in his cost than a guy like Russell Wilson does, because there's a lot more risk in his production profile. So that's, you know, I sort of reject that argument. What I support the argument for a guy like Herbert is, and I'm just using him as a placeholder, this isn't anti-Herbert, I like Justin Herbert, but using him as a sort of a proxy for the idea that he gives you access to going both ways on a trade. I think that's something that we can really think of. And so I think there's multiple prongs to this, right? It's that, think about when we're building our roster, think about, you know, the consequences of what we do in terms of, you know, not just 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years, right, in terms of production, but 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years in terms of trades, in terms of whether you have the types of pieces that you can put together to make a deal. And this is sort of stealing off some of the NBA stuff I've been thinking about more and more, which is when you know, there's a value in having an expensive contract because it balances a trade. You have to give a contract to take a contract to make it match, especially in season, to get under the cap or whatnot. You know, those are the types of things that we need to be thinking about. And so I think that this takes multiple forms, right? And so can we, this is a classic case of like moving up in tiers, right? So moving up, you know, taking Damian Harris and adding Damian Harris, something to Damian Harris to get a core asset of Antonio Gibson, for example, you know, making, you know, putting two pieces together to get Antonio Gibson. And then with Antonio Gibson, you're closer to the line of, all right, if I want to pivot to, you know, DeAndre Swift, for example, like that gap isn't that far. Right. And so sort of the incremental steps of trying to get more and more elite assets, obviously it gives you more and more flexibility because you can go back down. You can trade Antonio Gibson for somebody else, or you can trade someone from that tier for a lower person and get other assets. Or you can trade him up, right? You can then keep moving up the board. And I think that's one of the things as I sort of look at this, you know, layering is sort of building in a concept that I'm working on of, it's not just layering in terms of, you know, having guys at different layers or different price points at the position, but it's also trying to consistently move up the price points, right? So taking, you know, moving from situational guy to core guy, moving from core guy to elite guy. And I'll have some more work on this. It's going to be like the, if you're familiar with the show, Parks and Recreation, it's the Ron Swanson Pyramid of Greatness. And it's all these funny things about masculinity. It's all absurd, but he's talking about, you know, he's teaching these kids how to be, you know, how to be men. And it's like a basketball thing and they got to get this right haircut and all this stuff. And the it's kind of the same thing with players, right? It's the, you kind of want to work up the pyramid of, you know, of situational guy to contributor to core guy to elite guy, and sort of being able to sort of pull those deals, you kind of have to have players in that range. And so that's one of the things I've been thinking about, you know, in terms of building out deals, in terms of thinking about how to construct deals, how to construct rosters. It's more than just production. And I think that if there's been a not necessarily a limitation, but in terms of, you know, we need to have a multiple focus in terms of not just production, but how we can extract some value in the trade market from profiles. So it's not just drafting them. It's trading for them, whether it's at a discount. You know, typically it's at a discount that we're trying to make these deals. We're trying to get assets that are depreciating or have depreciated for some reason that we think is wrong, being able to make those deals. It's having guys in the range to do it with, you know. So if Dak Prescott starts off horrible and I've got Justin Herbert, I can make that deal again, where if someone's seen as a core guy, whatnot, you know, maybe I still have some questions or whatever. They don't know that, but it gives me the ability to make a Herbert to Dak Prescott type pivot, or Kyler Murray or whoever, right? It gives you those flexibilities where it's a lot tougher to do it from further down the line. The same thing is largely true at tight end. It's the same thing is true at all these positions, but I think tight end's another one where we can get sort of buy on the idea of, hey, we're just going to take, you know, we sort of know what the profiles are. We're just going to take them and you know, be plus EV there because we're sort of making the profile bet. And that's good, right? That'll get you ahead. But there is a an illiquidity to a guy like Evan Ingram. So it's going to be tough to pivot from Evan Ingram to, you know, an injured George Kittle, for example. Again, I'm not trying to curse people. I'm just, you know, using examples that we've seen. That pivot is tough. Right? That is a tougher pivot to make than if you've got Hockenson, or if you've got Fant, or if you've got a higher up the board guy. It's much easier to sort of make those pieces fit. So I do think in terms of balancing rosters, again, at wide receiver, maybe I don't care as much because I think the market's so out of whack in terms of profiles that, you know, people are valuing things that I don't necessarily care to get in on in terms of, like, I don't need to per se, you know, again, just using examples, I don't need to build in a deal where I could sort of acquire CeeDee Lamb because I think he's overpriced. I think the profile's overpriced. It's not a profile I'm going to typically bet on until, you know, we get a little bit more proof of him, of the concept of him, and figure that out. You know, so I can take a guy like Amari Cooper, and it's not really a pivot type deal that I'm going to make. That's not really an arbitrage play that I'm typically going to do, is to try and go way, way up the board. Generally speaking, that's not really the deal that I'm making. I'm making more, you know, safe bets, you know, longevity bets, you know, floor ceiling combo bets than I am making, you know, oh, super elite, trying to, you know, make a huge deal for ascending guy, you know, the flavor of the week, whoever was the wide receiver one in any of those given 17 weeks last year. I'm not trying to make that deal historically. I am trying to make deals and pivot between running backs because that's something that we know, you know, we can do. We can move up tiers in terms of security. We can do those deals. That's deals that I think are right in our wheelhouse of successfully identifying and being capable of doing, you know. And so having a guy like Nick Chubb right now is another good example of this, right? Nick Chubb, you know, he's at running back 8, 9, 10 in that range. You can go either way, right? You can go Nick Chubb to David Montgomery, or you can go Nick Chubb up to, you know, conceivably again, you could go Nick Chubb to DeAndre Swift. You're much closer in that deal than you are, you know, rostering David Montgomery, right? Rostering, you know, Fournette, rostering whoever, right? So sort of thinking about it in that sense gives you a different sphere to which the player exists, right? Not just production, but utility. And I think that's something that we need to balance that. It's not just all, oh, I need to have this super hyper flexible roster. That's great. But people do that at the expense of production, typically, is the balance I think you need to make. I think generally if you have a guy in the range, you have a couple guys in the range, you can sort of pivot. You can make deals. You can sort of make, you know, it can be a two-parter. Right? You can trade Chubb for, you know, Chubb plus for Swift, for example, and then pivot from Swift to, you know, McCaffrey if you wanted, just using that example, where maybe it's tough to go from, you know, Chubb to McCaffrey. Right, you can sort of do those deals and work those angles much easier than you can trying to put a deal of Damian Harris to, you know, Swift together. Even if we think that Harris is undervalued, right, it's tougher to make that deal. So it just is, and so it's cost too much. It's very difficult to go from contributing player to core player, right? Those are expensive deals. So I think having guys in different ranges at the position in terms of roster balancing, in terms of layering your rosters, layering your assets, layering the cost of the assets, it gives you flexibility to make, you know, 2-for-2s across positions or all of those, you know, 2-for-1s or, you know, 3-for-2s or 2-for-3s. You know, all of those combinations are much easier to do when you've got some balance to the position. I'm not saying that you need to go out and certainly do that, but I think it's a higher end consideration in terms of roster building, in terms of construction. So when we're putting deals together, when we're thinking about, you know, when we're thinking about going through and building out our rosters and you know, going backwards, I'm going to do a series here on sort of working backwards. When we're thinking about those things, right, not just identifying where the core players are, but what might that mean to, you know, our core target players, our group of guys that we're going to be in on at particular costs. Identifying that, but also identifying, you know, what's that mean for my potential future ability to make deals, right? To be in on a falling quarterback. You know, I keep thinking about our goal should be to get more elite players. And if we can do that at quarterback, it gives us a really good advantage. And if we can do it at discounts, it gives us a really good advantage. One of the reasons why I like Watson so much, it's a discount. And I think that he can be that elite guy. You know, when Dak is hurt, right? he can be an elite guy. So making those deals is really something that we can continuously be thinking about, and giving ourselves shots to do those, I think, is much more in the realm of possible when you've got different ranges of guys on your team. So when you're not just rostering quarterback 12, 13, 14, when maybe you're rostering quarterback 6, quarterback 10, quarterback 18. Right, you can make more of, you've got more leeway to make those deals, and you can go from 18 to 4. You can make that huge jump up in deal, but having guys in multiple ranges gives you different price points to potentially do that deal in. So I think that's a you know, beyond just targeting the, you know, hitting our target players and sort of knowing and roster construction and sort of knowing our production edges, knowing also our future flexibility edges is something I think we need to think about and consider as well. Again, I'm not advocating taking suboptimal profiles, but I'm advocating, you know, thinking about the idea of roster balance in terms of opening up more trading opportunities, opening up more market opportunities. You know, one of the things that I have struggled with a bit in terms of going pure analytics and dynasty, and I've you know, in its purest sense, would be just crush running back late, you know, wait on quarterback, you know, early wide receiver, early tight end. You know, that would historically be the thing. This year, I think it's much different. Doing that makes you, it's very doable because it's, you know, it's heterodox, right? It's very different in terms of what the other positions are. The problem with that is you got the Oakland A's situation, right? Which is teams aren't valuing the things you're valuing, and that's why you're getting them at a discount. And it's tough to then pivot off of them, right? It's tough to make a trade. So recognizing sort of our edge, but also, you know, getting guys that sort of maximize our edge, but are sort of in cost range that are maybe a little bit more diverse than we would typically hit. I think that's something to think about. Again, I just want to repeat this. I'm not advocating suboptimal profiles. I'm more diversifying on the cost of the profiles that we're taking. So yeah, we could take, you know, yeah, we could wait on quarterback and take Stafford, you know, Cousins and, you know, Goff, because we sort of know that they're probably going to outproduce what their current cost is. Instead of doing that, maybe the pivot is, hey, we'll take Russell Wilson, who we also like the profile, who's going at a little bit of a discount, but that gives us a pivot opportunity, right? If he goes up in price a little bit, you know, it's really close to Dak, for example, or it's really close to, Lamar Jackson, just using names. Or if, you know, there's a price fallout on Aaron Rodgers, we can sort of pivot down. Hey, someone else wants to get at Aaron Rodgers. We'll give them our more elite guy, and we'll take the discount on Aaron Rodgers. You can do that, right? That gives you more flexibility. I think that's really the level of which I'm thinking more and more about how, yes, the proper profiles, but maybe diversify the cost at which we take them, because it gives us a little bit more flexibility going forward. So again, it's probably more a quarterback and maybe a tight end type conversation. I do think at running back, it makes some sense too. I'm not as much worried about it at wide receiver. It's not a game that I'm super into in terms of, you just look at the guys that have multiple hits at the 28, you know, between basically 25 and 28, 25 and 29, I think is some of the study I've been doing. Like, they outproduce their draft cost by a pretty good margin. They're undervalued assets. And so, you know, taking suboptimal assets earlier doesn't really mesh, right? That's not really the game that I'm trying to play. I'm more trying to sort of get access to, you know, higher end quarterbacks when they can be a discount, higher end tight ends when they can be a discount, and higher end running backs. So that would sort of be the shift. Again, I think this year is a really interesting year to be able to do this. And I think that this is a prime opportunity because you have wide receivers that are really attractive at costs that are really cheap. So you can go running back early. You can go tight end early. You can go quarterback early. And I would almost never have advocated going quarterback, running back, tight end with your first three picks. But I think that presents a really interesting and flexible option. And we don't necessarily know how the market's going to change either. And that someone brought this forward, I think it's a good point, is that maybe, you know, maybe we're in a situation right now where 10 quarterbacks are going in the first, you know, 14 picks. But is that going to be the same a year from now? Is that going to be the same 2 years from now? You know, is that going to be the same 6 months from now? Right? Is that, you know, if four running backs go off and you get Justin Jefferson, DK Metcalf, AJ Brown, and you know, and Kyle Pitts having enormous years, to all of a sudden, you know, and Mahomes struggles or for whatever reason, all of a sudden we've got one or two quarterbacks in the top 12 picks instead of 10, right? That is all stuff that can happen. And I think that, you know, being a little bit more flexible in terms of where your cost points are on your guys, I think that's stuff that can really be advantageous in terms of as we react to these moving markets. So that's the concept of layering. Again, I'm working through kind of writing it out and thinking about how to convey it in a written form, but I figured I would talk about it here, see if there's feedback. Obviously, I love feedback on all these things. Tell me I'm crazy. Tell me, hey, it's a good idea. Tell me, hey, here's what you're missing. You know, all those things. I love the feedback. So never hesitate with that. And you don't necessarily need to, you can, you don't need to worry about offending me. You can put it in the GroupMe chat, you can do it in DM or, you know, in the, you know, whatever form you want. You know, I like the feedback on this stuff, and that's stuff that I'm constantly thinking about, you know. And so for me right now, I guess the how I'm implementing this is I really like guys like Leonard Fournette and Damian Harris, but is there packages that I can do to move up to get, you know, up a tier? And that gives me, you know, if it's Antonio Gibson, if it's someone like that, then that gives me access to do more things. It just gives me more access to do more things as I'm moving from contributor up to, you know, core guy. It gives me more access to different core guys. And it gives me more of those opportunities that are, I think, different than I would have, you know, just running out plus EV, you know, Fournette, Harris, you know, stack of, hey, I'm going to, you know, use this as a running back four type situation. Yeah, it's positive. That's ahead of the game, most likely. But it's not necessarily the end all be all in terms of, hey, I can use those guys in a production way, or I can also use those guys to sort of pivot up and give myself some more access to getting more higher end and doing business at a higher end, you know, price point. So, all right, well, that'll do it for this episode, the Sunday strategy session. Till next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.